You're listening to a podcast from the BBC World Service. This is Hard Talk with me, Stephen Sacker. Thanks for downloading this edition of the programme. I do hope you enjoy it. Welcome to Hard Talk on the BBC World Service with me, Stephen Sacker. My guest today is one of the world's leading experts on the technologies destined to define the next phase of human development. Stuart Russell is a world-renowned computer scientist based at the University of California in Berkeley, but often to be found advising governments and the UN on the potential and the challenges inherent in the branch of technology known as artificial intelligence. At its heart, this is a field driven by the capacity of computers to store information, spot patterns, and learn. It is already being put to use by states and global tech corporations in fields as diverse as healthcare, defense, and politics. AI is going to radically change our lives as workers, citizens, consumers, social beings, everything. The question is, how far will machine intelligence go? It's tempting to dismiss such thoughts as science fiction, but that is not the way AI is viewed by those who understand it best, like my guest today, Stuart Russell. Welcome to Hard Talk.
Hi.
You have spent a career at the forefront of ideas on artificial intelligence. Can you give me a working definition?
Very straightforwardly, it means making machines intelligent. Traditionally, making machines that act so as they achieve their objectives. And that's more or less the same definition we apply to human intelligence.
Well, it's more or less the same definition we apply to any machine. I mean, we design a car to achieve the objective of traveling down the road in it. So is there something more about the intelligence that these machines that you work with and on are providing?
A car is designed to travel down the road, but that objective is our objective. The car doesn't know that's what it's for. But these machines, in some sense, do. They have an explicit internal model of what their objective is, and they can figure out how to achieve it. They might have the goal of winning a game of chess, and they can figure out how to do that and beat humans at it.
Learning. What about that word learning? Where does that fit?
So these days, following actually a recommendation made by Alan Turing in 1950, we build many of the AI systems not by programming them explicitly, but by training them. So we have general purpose learning algorithms that take examples from the real world, and then from those examples they extract general patterns, and then those patterns allow them to make predictions about new cases. So speech recognition, for example, is not trained by, you know, we write a recognizer for s and p. Instead, we just take hours and hours and hours of speech with a transcription, and then we feed that to a machine learning algorithm, and then it's able to recognize new instances of speech and transcribe it.
Learning, of course, very different from thinking. Is the word thinking ever applicable in the world of artificial intelligence?
It depends which philosopher you ask. and some argue, you know, is the word swimming applicable to submarines? In English, no, we don't say, but apparently in other languages, I think in Russian, they do use the word swim for submarines. And we use the word fly for airplanes, which we borrowed from birds. So are machines actually thinking? I would argue yes, in a meaningful sense. If you look at what a chess program is doing, it is imagining possible moves that it could make and imagining possible moves that the opponent could reply. It's plotting out these futures and then choosing the future that turns out best.
One more word before we get into the heart of your work, and that is autonomy, because it seems to me autonomy is a very important word. Once machines are able to learn, and we can obviously argue till the cows come home about whether they're thinking, but once they have this separateness from us as their masters, they've clearly crossed a very important line. Is autonomy at the heart of today's work on artificial intelligence?
Only in a very restricted sense, that we can allow freedom to the machine to choose how it achieves the objective, but it doesn't choose the objective. So the standard model for how we build AI systems is that the machine is something that finds optimal solutions for problems that we specify. So we say, I want you to win this chess game, and it figures out how to do it. So it has autonomy in the decision-making process, but not in the objective. And in fact, we don't really even know how a system might come up with its own objectives from scratch.
Elon Musk, who I don't know if you know, obviously he's out on the West Coast alongside you. Elon Musk of so many different ventures, from electric cars to space exploration, said this recently. He said, I'm very close to the cutting edge in AI, and it scares the hell out of me. It's capable of vastly more than almost anyone knows, and the rate of improvement is exponential. Digital superintelligence is a species-level risk. Do you agree?
I would have to say yes. Elon is a brilliant man. He uses colorful metaphors, so he talks about summoning the demon and other things, and he gets some flack for that. But the point he's making is the following. Intelligence is what gives us power over the world, over other species. If we make something else that's more intelligent than us, therefore more powerful than us, how do we make sure that it never has any power? It remains under our control forever.
It's about that power dynamic. It's about control. Right. And in a sense, most literally, it's about the off button.
Yes, that's one way of capturing the essence of this problem is, can you switch it off? And interestingly, so Alan Turing, who was the founder of computer science back in the late 1930s, and wrote one of the seminal papers on AI in 1950, was quite matter-of-fact. He said, eventually we would have to expect the machines to take control. So completely resigned. And he actually tried this idea out. Perhaps we might be able to switch the power off at a strategic moment, but even so, as a species, we would be humbled. And unfortunately, you can't just switch the power off. Any more than you can just play better moves than a superhuman chess program. It's superhuman. You can't play better moves than it. And you can't outthink a superhuman machine with which you're in conflict.
So you're saying that this is a track that once we go down it, there does appear to be an air of inevitability about the surpassing of human intelligence by the machine, which raises a question, and it gets to the very heart of where we are at this stage of humanity's development. Should we consider not going down this path of artificial intelligence? Is it even a possibility that we could say, we understand the potentiality, but we also see the profound level of potential risk and threat, and therefore we won't do it?
So that's a great question. There's a novel by Samuel Butler written in 1863 that answers that question. He describes a civilization that developed its machine technology and then reached that fork in the road and took the other fork. They decided to abandon machine technology, and they consigned the machines to the museum and said, we cannot take this risk because we don't want to lose control. I'm not sure we really have that choice, because the upside of AI is so enormous. If we achieve human-level AI or superhuman AI and we remain in control over it, then this could be a golden age for humanity, and the value is in the thousands of trillions of pounds. It's very hard to stop the momentum. You know, right now it's hundreds of billions of dollars being invested every year
from the very beginning of this interview, you conceded that the risk is indeed potentially existential. Therefore, not only is the reward enormous, and you've just monetized it, but the risk is beyond any monetary value. It is indeed the future of our species.
And so this is the question, right? Do we follow Alan Turing and say the loss of control is inevitable? I don't think we should do that. I think what we need to do is to understand where is the source of the risk. This is not as if a superior alien civilization just lands on Earth and they're more intelligent and more capable than we are and we're toast. This is something that we're designing. So where does the problem come from? What is it about the way we design AI systems that leads there to be a conflict in which we lose control?
Do you think we understand where that point is and how it works? Because I'm just thinking right now, if one, and let's get to the nitty-gritty of what's happening in AI. We have AI being developed to the tune of tens and hundreds of billions of dollars across the world, both by corporate actors, you know, the big tech companies at the forefront that we can all name, and states as well, whether it be the US in terms of its Defense Department or the Chinese and Russian and other governments doing it at a state level. Do you think those various actors understand precisely the dilemma that you've just laid out?
So I can say for sure that the Chinese government does, because their official policy position acknowledges that AI is an existential risk to mankind if it's not developed correctly. To come back to the earlier question, where is the point where it goes wrong? Mm. What is the nature of the catastrophe? I believe it comes from the way we've been thinking about AI. So we might call it the standard model for AI, which is that we build machines that take an objective that we specify, they come up with a plan to achieve it, and then off they go. And the problem is something that we've known for thousands of years, that we don't know how to specify these objectives correctly. So King Midas said, "I want everything I touch to turn to gold." And we know what happened to him, right? His water and his wine and his food and his family all turned to gold. And he dies in misery and starvation. As an engineering discipline, I would say it's just bad engineering if the only way you can get this to work correctly is to specify objectives perfectly, right? That would be...
Because that'll never happen.
Right. It would be like saying, okay, you can only fly this airplane, you know, if you have seven arms and five brains. But, well, and if you don't, well, it's going to crash, right? That's a badly designed airplane for a human being to fly. And so the answer comes exactly from this point that you can be pretty sure any objective the human states is not the true underlying objective. Therefore, the machine needs to know that it doesn't know what the true objective is. That what the human asks is perhaps indicative evidence of what they might like, but certainly is not complete. So if I ask you for a cup of coffee, that doesn't mean that's my only objective in life and everything else doesn't matter. Like I'm allowed to mow down people in Starbucks and you know, crash the car on the way back with the coffee and so on. Of course, that's not what I mean by the objective. There's all kinds of unstated stuff, some of which I couldn't even state if you tried to get me to state it.
So far we've been fairly abstract. It's fascinating, but fairly abstract. So let's just bring it down, if we can, briefly to the here and now. We know, as I said, the billions of dollars are being invested in AI. In particular spheres, there is a concentration. Defense spending, for example. The search for what one might call autonomous weapons. And we've seen the rise of the drone. We now, thanks to the Turkish government, know that there are swarm drones, which are, according to Turkey, which has developed this capability, capable of using facial recognition technology, deciding for themselves whether that person represents a legitimate target, opening fire or smashing into them with explosive if they deem it to be the right target, and if not, coming home again, so that they have finished their mission and decided there was no attack to be launched.
Right.
That kind of weaponization of AI sounds to many people extraordinarily scary. Are you scared?
Yes. In the near term, that's a very, very serious risk. In fact, 2 years ago, we made a small film called Slaughterbots, which describes something that's very like this Turkish weapon. And many governments derided this film as science fiction, that this couldn't be possible for decades, and it's not even worth discussing a treaty to ban this kind of weapon because it's so far off in the future. But already at that time, the Turkish government and the arms manufacturer STM were in the process of designing and manufacturing pretty much precisely the thing that we showed in the movie. So we've been working very hard to bring a treaty about, but the way things work in diplomacy, if the United States, Russia, and the United Kingdom are opposed to a treaty, it's very hard to move things forward.
So when you look across the piece, would you say it is in militarization of AI that you, at the moment, find most cause for concern?
So I think we have to think about different timescales simultaneously. In the short term, to me, this is the most serious risk. I think another big issue that's happening is the manipulation of opinions through social media. And part of that comes down to the way the automated algorithms work. And it's the same issue. The objective of these automated algorithms is to maximize click-through. And the way they operate is, in fact, to manipulate people so that they become more predictable in their opinions and the kinds of things that they will consume. So that's had a dramatically negative effect on the entire world. It was collateral damage of an algorithm operating to optimize the wrong objective. Just click-through is a poorly designed objective because it doesn't take into account all of these externalities, these changes to people's opinions, which have such a negative effect globally.
We see, as I've already said, states pouring money into AI, and we've referred to the weapons business, but surveillance in China, where we know now that facial recognition technology is being married with mass surveillance to, in a sense, create a surveillance society where your behaviors are tracked and then given credit scores and are part of a means of defining your place in society. A really all overarching sort of surveillance notion. Yeah. And then we've got Russia, which I'm going to quote Vladimir Putin at this point. Russia appears to sort of see a sort of AI quote-unquote arms race to the point where he said artificial intelligence is the future not only for Russia but for all humankind, and whoever becomes the leader in this sphere will become the ruler of the world. Is that a mentality that you think is going to hasten us to this very bad dark place that you talked about?
I think it's quite possible, yes. If countries feel that they're in this live or die competition with other nations to be the first to create superhuman AI, then they're going to cut corners. They're not going to wait for these more robust solutions that allow humans to retain control. They're going to go straight for pushing forward on the standard model in the hopes that they get there first. In terms of standard of living for your people, there's really no need to be saying we want to rule, we want leadership, we want ownership of this technology. And the large corporations have actually agreed through an international organization called the Partnership on AI that whoever achieves superhuman AI will share it with everybody.
And do you really believe that? Because this gets down to the idea of whether AI can be in any sense regulated globally. I mean, we made an early sort of comparison with the potential threat of nuclear weapons. And of course, since the 1950s, we've had the IAEA, the International Watchdog in Vienna, which is supposed to control and monitor the development of nuclear facilities around the world. In the field of AI, is it possible to imagine that level of global cooperation and transparency, both at corporate and state level?
So it's very interesting to look back at the history of nuclear energy and nuclear technology because there are so many parallels. It's a potentially civilization-ending technology, but it also, at least for many years, was thought to be something that could create a golden age of unlimited energy and also peace.
It's that same risk-reward dynamic.
Yeah, and unfortunately, even though there was a movement among scientists at the end of World War II to share the technology, to sort of put it in trust for humanity, instead, it became used as a tool of domination, first by the US, and then, of course, the USSR obtained the technology, and then it became the nuclear arms race. And so part of the problem is that they tried to put it in trust for humanity after the fact, when it was already owned by the United States. What we're trying to do now is to solve this problem before the fact, before the technology is created, do two things. One is to change the way we design it so that we actually remain in control of the AI systems forever. So eliminate the standard model and move to a new model, which doesn't involve fixed known objectives that are put into the system. The second part of it is to essentially have unbreakable agreements that the technology will be shared for the benefit of humanity.
Do you think that the rise of AI is going to undermine our liberal notions of democracy and individualism? Is it in the end going to play into the hands of authoritarian controlling systems?
I think the Chinese model is something that my guess is they're going to abandon. Because what happens when you set up something like this social credit score, which is supposed to be a numerical calculation of how much that person is contributing to an overall harmonious, virtuous social order, is that people simply behave to optimize the score and not virtue and harmony. So you get bonus points, for example, for visiting your aging parents, because Chinese tradition says you should honor your parents and your ancestors, and so that's considered to be virtuous behavior. But of course, if you're only doing it to get more points, you lose the virtue. So you're encouraging what used to be virtuous behavior, but you're turning it into cynical behavior. So you end up with a society of cynical point maximizers rather than anyone doing anything for a good reason.
And my final thought is this. Throughout our conversation, we've sort of posed a juxtaposition between man and machine. It was an either or. You know, either man retains control or the machines, as they exponentially increase their capacity for data storage and thinking, learning anyway, they take over and we lose control and we can't turn them off. Maybe it's not an either or. Maybe what we should think about for the future is the melding of the two, that somehow man and machine are married.
And this is another thing that Elon Musk has suggested. In fact, he started a company, Neuralink, whose goal is exactly that. So you have to ask yourself, you know, if we all need to have brain surgery and electronic implants just to survive, did we make a mistake somewhere along the line? And I think the answer would be yes. So I don't find that to be an attractive future for the human race.
But I think Elon Musk would say we're halfway there already. The relationship we have with our mobile phone and the degree to which it now is a central part of almost our personality, the way we relate to the rest of the world, we're halfway there. He says if you can just sort of physically put the chip from your mobile phone into your brain, you will become some sort of cyborg. And maybe that is the artificial intelligence future that we face.
It could be. So there, if it's just for communicating, I don't really have too much of a problem with that, although I'm still opposed to the idea that you won't even get a job unless you've already had the brain surgery. But if it's really enhancement of our cognitive function, that I think is problematic. Because then what we think of as human in some sense vanishes. And what's left is whatever the next generation of some giant IT corporation can dream up. And again, that's not the future I would like.
This is where your optimism runs out.
I think the human race will choose a different path.
We need to get you back several years from now and see where we are at. But for now, we're out of time. Stuart Russell, thank you so much for being on Hard
Talk.
Thank you.
It's been delightful.
Thank you. That was an edition of Hard Talk presented by me, Stephen Sacker. For details of our complete range of podcasts and our terms of use, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.
Octopuses, the mosquito, a woodpecker, fireflies, mussels, geckos, sea otters, termites, a cartwheeling desert spider.
The natural world is full of problem solvers.
Bat, tardigrades.
They've had millions of years to test things out.
Biggest predatory fish in the world.
Now, it's our turn to take inspiration from them.
Exciting new clue of the future. Extend the time that we can preserve transplant organs to make enjoying ice cream.
30 animals that made us smarter.
Dolphins, bombardier beetles.
From the BBC World Service.
Butterflies, peacocks.
The podcast which investigates the amazing ways in which animals have inspired us.
Future of pain-free injection.
Just search for 30 animals that made us smarter wherever you found this podcast.
Teach us how to extract water right out of the air.
This stuff is better than science fiction.